We are starting a new chapter in this book, Politics According to the Bible, that I've been working through. And the chapter is called Chapter 15, Special Groups. Well, okay, why the topics in this chapter are different from earlier chapters. You have been so patient with me. We've worked through 14 chapters of this book over the last year and a half or so. Now I'm coming to the end of the specific topics, and this is a different chapter. Why? Number two on your outline, all of the issues involve the general question, what is the best way to do good for the nation in this area of life? So it really, point 2b, it depends on evaluating the results of certain policies and actions. I'm going to talk about trial lawyers. I'm going to talk about tariffs. I'm going to talk about farm subsidies. But in all of those questions, I'm just going to say, is this doing good for the nation? Or is it just benefiting some special groups? And in many of the sections for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to say the few are benefiting at the expense of the many, because somehow, through political influence or other reasons, they have gotten enough influence to gain special benefits for themselves. And so that's going to be the theme I'm coming back to again and again. If we're seeking to do good for the nation as a whole, perhaps many of these things should be called into question. The biblical justification for looking at issues just from the standpoint of, are they doing good for the nation as a whole? I've got 4 points here. Point A, it's the responsibility of those in authority to be God's servant for your good, Romans 13:14. And whenever I give that to somebody in political office, I write that. You are God's servant for good. Romans 13:4. And that's their responsibility to do good for the nation. Point B, government is to give approval and praise to those who do what is good. To praise those who do right or do good, says 1 Peter 2:14. And so that means that the government's role is to encourage what does good for the society as a whole. So we should ask, are these things doing good? And then third, government is to serve the people, not be served by the people. That's going to come up today when we talk about regulators. Samuel, we talked about a long time ago in chapter 3, he's an example of a good ruler who didn't take personal benefit from the people. Contrast with 1 Samuel 8:11-17, a king will take, and that's the tendency of government. It gets power to take more and more and more. So we have to be on the watch for that. And then fourth, point D, and I'll talk about this morning on regulators. Government should safeguard human liberty, which is valued by God. I argued that way back in chapter 3, that the opposite of liberty is slavery. And, of course, the beginning of the nation of Israel was when God brought them out of the land of bondage, out of the land of slavery, and into the freedom of the promised land. And so the Bible opposes slavery and excessive government domination of all of our lives, and it values from beginning to end human choice. But human choice, Adam and Eve in the garden, all the way till the end of the book of Revelation, let him who hears say, come and take the water of life without price. The Bible is appealing to us to choose for good as opposed to choosing for evil, but it places that responsibility on us. So this whole Bible places a lot of emphasis on human choice, and that implies freedom to choose to do as we wish. So those are the reasons why I think it's good to look at what is doing good for the nation. The topics covered in this chapter might result in sincerely held differences of opinion among Bible-believing Christians. I showed my section on trial lawyers and tort reform to the last year's president of the Christian Legal Society, a wonderful man, he wrote me back a different opinion about trial lawyers and whether there should be restrictions on malpractice awards and all this kind of stuff. So Christians can differ on this, and I respected his opinion. I kind of modified a little bit without changing the whole thrust of the section as a result of his opinion. But I have to say, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm less directly arguing from Scripture. When I talked about freedom of religion, it was right out of the Bible and the need for government to protect what is doing good and giving us a freedom to choose. And where I talked about protection of the lives of unborn children, it was a lot based on the Bible. This is going to be less directly based on the Bible, which means I'm trying to give you permission to disagree with me if you wish to do so on these topics. But point 5b, my general argument in the chapter is the United States should abolish several laws and policies that give benefits to special groups because these policies cost the nation much more than the benefits they bring to the nation. Okay, so now section B, we're going to talk about the first topic, the first special group. And the first special group I picked out is kind of an invisible group. It's regulators, invisible bureaucrats who regulate people's lives. Because in many ways now, our lives are controlled by an army of bureaucrats at various levels. In the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, in OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and the CPSC, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and many other agencies, they pass regulations. Now, look, some of these are necessary. I like it that there is a Food and Drug Administration, so I don't, when I buy a canned peaches at the store, or Margaret does, they don't poison me. I mean, there's some regulations on food, so and the milk is fresh, and it's not infected by disease. I think there's some, but the problem is a good thing can become excessive and begin to regulate. So it goes overboard. Now, point B, though there's necessary product control and safety standards and justice in the workplace, the problem is agencies that become overly intrusive. And now I want to mention this book. This is a fantastic book, which I wish everybody in government everywhere would read. It's called The Death of Common Sense by Philip K. Howard. Philip Howard is a lawyer in Manhattan. And he began making a list of the foolish regulations that burden people and keep and really rob us of our freedom. And I'm going to just mention a couple of things. He says in 1988, the nuns of the Missionaries of Charity were looking for an abandoned building that they could convert into a homeless shelter. And they were in the South Bronx, metro New York City area. The head of the nuns of Missions of Charity was named Mother Teresa. And she had been talking with Mayor Ed Koch, and she said, you know, we'd like to get a building to help feed and clothe and house homeless people in New York City. He said, great, we have a lot of buildings that you can get for almost nothing. We'd love you to come do it. So they look. They found two fire-gutted buildings on 148th Street, and New York City offered them the buildings at $1 each. Great solution. They set aside $500,000 for renovation. They got the renovation going, and they figured they could house 64 homeless men in a communal setting with a dining room and a kitchen and a lounge on the second floor, dormitory rooms on the third and fourth floor. The only thing is that according to this order of nuns, they shy away from the regular use of modern conveniences. So they would not have a dishwasher. They would do the dishes by hand. And they, you know, it's a four-story building. So they said, well, we're not going to have an elevator. You're not going to have an elevator. Our code requires you to have an elevator. So they spent 2 years trying to get permission from the city of New York. They said, you know, we don't mind climbing three flights of stairs to the fourth floor. What if you have handicapped people who can't climb? We'll carry them. No, sorry. New York City requires an elevator in every new or renovated multiple-story building. The Missionaries of Charity said, we'd never use the elevator and we can't spend another $100,000. Finally, after 2 years, Mother Teresa gave up. They said the sisters felt they could use the money much more usefully for soup and sandwiches. In a polite letter to the city expressing their regrets, the missionaries of charity noted that the episode served to educate us about the law and its many complexities. Now, Philip Howard gives that as an example of thousands of cases where rules, mindless, inflexible rules, keep government officials from doing what they ought to do, and that's use common sense. So the death of common sense, how law is suffocating America, and nobody dares violate it or go otherwise. No person decided to spite Mother Teresa. It was the law. And what it required offends common sense. There are probably a million buildings in New York City without elevators. Homeless people would love to live in almost any one of them. Walking up a flight of stairs is not, after all, the greatest problem in their lives. But the law, aspiring to the perfect housing abode, has accumulated so many good ideas that the only type of new housing that is permitted must satisfy middle-class standards. I'll give you another example. OSHA. Some of you have owned businesses. Yeah, John Wiederquist is going like this in front row already. Well, OSHA decided to visit a brick factory in Reading, Pennsylvania, the Glengarry Brick Factory. Inspectors walk around the factory with a measuring tape, and they always find violations. They are especially interested in railings. The railings, according to the regulation, have to be 42 inches high. They had some railings that were 39 inches high and 40 inches high, not 42 inches high, have to replace them. More than that, warning signs have to be posted everywhere. A large poison sign dominates one side of a storage shed filled with bags of something hazardous. It turns out to be sand. Because sand contains a material called silica, and some scientists believe that silica, in conditions found nowhere except in certain grinding and mining operations, might cause cancer. So OSHA classifies sand as a poison. You've got to put big poison labels on your sand. There's another one where material safety data sheets, MSDS, have to be attached to or accompany the shipment of hazardous materials. Well, that's fine if you're shipping hydrochloric acid. But in 1991, OSHA decided there was a warning of brick poisoning. Now, bricks can fall on people, yes, that's true, but never have bricks been considered poisonous. But OSHA decided that they would cite a brick maker for failing to supply a material safety data sheet with each pallet of bricks. If a brick is sawed, maybe it'll release small amounts of silica. Brickmakers thought the government had gone crazy. But they dutifully put on labels saying, brick is a hard ceramic body with no color. Its boiling point is above 3,500 degrees Fahrenheit. Finally, 1994, OSHA relented. Well, this book is full of these things. And you know, when I first got this, our son's father-in-law, Tom Petkoff in Florida, gave me this. And I read it, and I thought, I should give this to every member of the city council in Libertyville, Illinois, where we lived. And I decided, I just kind of got tired of the idea, and I didn't give it to him. I thought maybe they'd seen it already, but I should have. And I'd kind of like to get a copy of this for every government official. That is the death of common sense. But the point is, instead of allowing people to make reasonable judgments, we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of rules promulgated by invisible bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., who haven't lived the real life that they're regulating. And more regulators come along and figure out more and more rules for us. Now, I'm going to digress for a minute. But in connection with this, I read this past week about the Department of Agriculture. It's interesting that as the number of farmers in the United States has declined, the number of people working for the Department of Agriculture has increased. And so the story goes that a person was walking down the hallways of the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C., and came across a man with his head down at his desk. He was sobbing, crying, weeping. He stopped and said, "What's wrong?" And the regulator said, "My farmer died." That one isn't factual, though. Well, this is regulators, and Philip Howard is opposed to it. He says, commitments to detailed regulatory law results in no flexibility to make judgments based on need and specific circumstances in an individual situation. Government is given over to point two, government by excruciating detail, not allowing the exercise of freedom and common sense to make decisions according to broad guidelines. And here's where it hits home. It means that we are robbed of our freedom, nibbled away bit by bit by bit by bit by bit. I'm going to digress again. Some cities now have rules that you can't use plastic bags. Fortunately, we don't have that here, but San Francisco, you can't use plastic bags. I like plastic bags because I can carry 5 or 6 or 7 of them in from the car when Margaret brings home a whole bunch of groceries. And I can't carry that many paper bags. Plus, you can use plastic bags for other things. And if you have a cat or a dog, I don't need to explain. And they carry things they reuse. But the question is, should I have the choice to be able to use plastic bags or not? And if that's taken away from me, a little bit of my freedom is gone. Same thing with light bulbs. So, just yesterday, I went to look to see what the temperature was set at on our thermostat in the hallway. So I turn on the light. I've got to sit there and wait and wait and wait while these energy-efficient light bulbs heat up. And you know, after about a minute, I can finally see the thermostat. What has happened? Some government regulators have taken that minute of freedom away from my life. And it's just nibble, 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 nibble. Government instead of, you know, Samuel warned in 1 Samuel 8 that the king would take your sons and daughters, take your olive trees and your orchards, your vineyards, your crops, your herds, and you will be his slaves. But instead of taking our, well, it does take our money too, but government's taking our time. And taking our time is taking our freedom. And so that's why I'm concerned about this nibble, nibble, nibble process of government robbing us of freedom. The freedom to decide if you want to, that you want a light that goes on just like that. Now, you say, well, maybe you can save electricity by having these energy efficient bulbs. Fine. I want to be able to make that decision. And in some rooms, maybe that's suitable. But in some rooms, it's not. And so I have to wait and wait. And I don't like waiting. Okay, so let's see. Loss of human freedom. Sand as poison, number 4. Material safety data sheets. Oh, yeah, number 6 under point B1. Number 6, material safety data sheets warning people against the poisonous characteristics of Windex. And then there was another employee in Florida cited for not putting a warning label on table salt. If you eat too much of it, it can hurt you. So many thousands of rules that keeping one may still, you can keep one and end up violating another. And many people shut down their businesses or move out of their homes due to arbitrary enforcement of inflexible rules. And Philip Howard details these. Now, this is not a new idea. Back in 1944, a man named Friedrich von Hayek published a book called The Road to Serfdom. He thought it was going to be just an obscure economics text published by the University of Chicago Press, and it went into the hundreds of thousands, and here's the 50th anniversary edition. Hayek grew up under Nazi control in Austria. He fled. He was an economist. He fled to England, where he taught economics in England for many years, eventually earned a Nobel Prize in economics. But his thesis in this book, The Road to Serfdom, which is on my top 10 best economics books of all time, Hayek's thesis is government gives control of people's lives over to so-called experts. And then the experts decide how you're supposed to live. And they nibble away at your freedom bit by bit until you end up being serfs. That is his name for the slavery that government, well, he thought, was subjecting England to in the years after World War II. during and after World War II. And he had seen it happen in Nazi Germany. He was watching it happen in England. And Hayek's book, again, I strongly recommend. Governments tend to nibble away at freedom little by little until freedom is lost. I'm trying to open your eyes, and when somebody says, we're going to give you this new energy-efficient light bulb, something should go on in your brain that says, whoop, loss of freedom, I don't like it. There's another thing that happened. In the Wall Street Journal, just within the last 2 weeks, there was an article on recent consumer reports, testing of all the washing machines that are now on the market. They don't get your clothes clean anymore. Why not? Because they have to be energy efficient. That means they don't want to use much electricity or much water. So they have to be front loading, and they go around this way, and the clothes never get fully submerged in water. Instead of being top loading, and they go this way, and the clothes are all underwater. Now, coming back to common sense, let me ask you this. If you can't use electricity very much and you can't use water very much, how clean are your clothes going to be? Let's see. Can't use electricity or water. How clean can my clothes be? Wall Street Journal said the latest consumer reports testing of all the new washing machines on the market shows that none of them do better than a fair job of getting your clothes clean. And they build up mold and... But that's just what you can buy because the government has mandated that we're going to save energy. Now, what should be going on in your brain when I talk about that? Loss of freedom. That's the point. That's what's happening. And see, I believe that God gave us energy sources in the world in abundant measure. I talked about abundance of coal, oil, natural gas. Gave us abundant energy sources and nuclear energy as well. Because what does energy do? It makes life easier. It makes life happier. Energy gives us light. Light bulbs. Energy gives us washing machines that work. So every time something says energy saving, what we ought to be thinking is work producing. But I thought progress was going forward in making less work for ourselves, making life happier, brighter, more cheerful, making clothes cleaner. But no, we have to go backwards. What's driving all that desire for energy saving? There's one theory that's behind it all. Global warming. Sure, because we can't use carbon sources. And so let's save energy. Well, anyway, that's where we're going. Number two, citizens and especially legislators must be continually on guard against such regulations. Overregulation is anti-democratic. It doesn't let people make their own choices, like on light bulbs. It's anti-free market because regulators, rather than the economy, determine economic activity. I'm going to skip over the rest of that page. There are just some more examples that I go into in my book. Here's another example. This is not related to global warming. Or energy, but in 2008, Congress, in its wisdom, passed the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. This was a brilliant piece of legislation. It decided that if you're going to sell anything that is used by children, you have to get an independent third-party lab to test whether your products are lead-free. And then you have to get certification. Now, that sounds fine if you're worried about lead poisoning for children from toys. In fact, in 2008, one child was injured in the United States from lead poisoning. One child. So now, what did we do? We had a law that says everybody that sells anything that's used by children has to get all their products tested for lead. Well, our daughter-in-law has her own small business in Minneapolis where she makes children's clothing out of recycled organic material. She was concerned. She can't afford to go to get an independent third-party test of all her clothing to see if it's free of lead. For goodness sake, clothing doesn't have lead. But that was what the law said. And then if you don't do the testing, you're in danger of somebody suing you for noncompliance and ruining you, driving you out of business. Who else was hurt by this? Thrift shops. that sell toys to children. Had to throw out hundreds of millions of dollars of inventory. Thrift shops that sell books that can be read by children. Well, we didn't test the books for lead. Have to throw it away. Can you imagine the harm to the economy from this idiotic law? Just made up by regulators in Washington, D.C., and legislators in this case, who didn't really think. And so Salvation Army, Goodwill, predicted the destruction of $100 million in inventory. And that's taking away the well-being of the nation, because it's just saying, well, here we have wealth that's been created to be used by people, especially poorer people in the nation, and now we're just going to throw it all away. Motorcycle and ATV makers, because they sold their products to kids, predicted a loss of $1 billion because they couldn't test all the individual parts with an independent third-party laboratory to see if they were lead-free. Not because these products contained any lead, my goodness, clothing and books, but because the manufacturers couldn't afford to have the independent third-party testing. I don't know where that's going, if that's going to be overturned. In the last Congress, Congressman Henry Waxman, Democratic California, the chairman of the House Energy Committee, who was responsible for this, refused even to hold hearings concerning reform of the law. But my point is this: government bureaucrats who regulate people's lives have obtained far too much power, and the nation as a whole is poorer as a result. Okay, I'm going to stop there and see if you want to interact on that for a minute or two.
We'll do about cars next week.
Yeah, well, now I don't know. I might get to cars. Yeah, let's see. John Butel. John, right up here.
See, to me, this really seems very simple. There's a line all the way to the left on one side is the way God wants things to be, the way he's designed it for us to enjoy things, to be free, et cetera, et cetera. And you got all the way on the other side of the line. It's the people who believe that man is the problem with the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were all gone, the earth would be fine.
Yeah.
We're like an infestation.
Yeah, there is some of that.
That needs to be cleared up somehow. Yeah. Now, there's a whole lot in between.
Yeah.
But we're sliding all the time, a little bit toward that. I'm not saying that they all believe that, but we slide that way. It's a philosophy. We just keep sliding toward
man. So you hinder man's use of the earth rather than encouraging it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Who else has a comment here? Yeah, Neville.
So Wayne, I just wondered how you personally deal with this deep frustration when we see this lunacy, madness, idiocy with our freedoms being robbed and the impact on families and things. And I'm just curious how you personally process all of that for learning capabilities for some of us.
I vote for people who favor human freedom, number one. Give money to them if I can for their campaigns, and I try to write books. I mean, do what you can. And try to teach on it. So, but Neville, I think your question raises, is this inevitable? Is it irretrievable? Can it be changed? Can it be brought back? Yes, I think it can be. I think people around the nation are waking up to the fact that our freedoms are being taken away. And we're becoming like medieval serfs who are just, you know, living on the large farm acreage of the lord of the manor and just doing only what, it's just like slaves. I think people are waking up to this and saying, wait a minute, stop. We don't want this to happen. I hope so. Yep. What's your name?
Jason.
You're Brian's friend?
Yeah. I think one thing that's a real shame is just how the country as a whole is not as involved or informed as they used to be.
Mm.
As John Politon says, people are sheep, and they will follow.
Mm.
And, you know, there are litigators and bureaucrats. It's their job to put together rules and do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the press is, in many ways, biased.
Mm.
And people as a whole just say, oh, well, that sounds like a great idea. Let's protect kids from lead, but they don't go to the next level. People don't really think, you know, they don't really think things through.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, good. Yeah. Here's the hopeful thing, though. There are people who think, and they have access to the internet now. And so alternative information is increasingly available. And again, I'm going to say the same thing I said with Neville. I'm still hopeful. Who knows what will happen? Rose. You're going to tell me you're in favor of these new light bulb regulations.
Oh, no way. It's affected my business even. Now we can't buy replacements for the lighting that we have, that we are required to keep on 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, in case we have a burglary, then the people can see what they're taking. So, yes. Anyhow, it's not about a light bulb. I was just wondering if I would be out of line to ask you a question about Brazil. And what has happened recently. The fact that George Soros has invested tons of money in Brazil, and now the president of the U.S. has gone down there and given his blessing for offshore drilling so that Brazil can prosper, and therefore one step toward social justice to lower our standard of living so that the rest of the world could participate, because after all, we were the perpetrators. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but
see a real clear possibility that you are true, you are right. But I don't, I mean, it's hard to know exactly what people's motives are, but encouraging a lot of oil drilling in Brazil, and Brazil has increased its energy production by over 800% now in the last, I don't know how many years, 10 years or something, by drilling. And I would definitely support that process in the United States as well. They've become completely energy independent, and we could. So... yeah, and then we could have washing machines that work and light bulbs that work. Yeah, way in the back over here. Oh, right in the front, Ken.
I've been a builder in Denver, and one of the things you haven't mentioned is when one regulatory government regulation interferes with another. Mm-hmm. We were building an apartment project, and the mailboxes that had to be OSHA compliant to handicap, so we put the mailbox that were the handicapped ones so a handicapped person could reach them. However, that was in violation of the post office regulations and the way they wanted the
because they wanted the letter carriers to reach them.
Well, they wanted it in a different order. And as a result of that, we got it straightened out, but it took several days, and we had to go down, and we had to fill out forms, and we had to do all this stuff. So we're even in trying to comply with regulations, you get in trouble because you find out inadvertently you're violating other regulations.
Right. And again, you're taking several days to straighten it out. That's loss of freedom. That's your freedom to grill hamburgers at home or, you know, whatever you want to do. What the Constitution calls the pursuit of happiness. Along with life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness is the third thing mentioned that is a God-given right. And that means being able to choose what you want to do with your day and with your hours and with your time. And that's being taken away. Yep. Okay, who's this? I forgot your name. Phil? No.
Tom.
Tom, yeah. Okay.
I cannot refrain here. Regarding the light bulbs, it seems like there's positives and negatives in everything. These spiral bulbs save energy. They last longer. However, I've read that they do contain mercury.
Yes.
They have to be disposed of appropriately.
Yes.
Nancy and I are stockpiling incandescent bulbs.
Yep.
And they also emit what I understand to be EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, just like the microwave does, which is dangerous to us. This morning on the news, I heard about cell phones, how dangerous they are. It's been proven now in terms of brain problems, but especially for children, they should not be using cell phones. Thanks for allowing me to share my ignorance.
Yeah, and those bulbs, the newer energy-efficient bulbs, if you break one, I guess the instructions say, open all the windows and clear the room for 10 minutes. Loss of freedom. 10 minutes gone. Then sweep it up and then let the room air out again. I mean, yep. What's your name over here? Gordon? Okay. Ron's getting exercise here today. Hold it.
I know this goes back a ways, the example, but it is no less true, and it relates to your principle. I've worked for 3M for 33 years, and during some years when they were all worried about how many women were in positions within the companies, they came in and showed movies that everybody had to watch, and they showed the businessman as a typical fool. It was a government run by the Atomic Energy Commission, which was the enforcing agency for 3M. We couldn't find women to take technical positions because not very many of them were taking, in those days, engineering and science. But the head of all 3M technical planning was a woman with a PhD in science, and she was very, very excellent. Mm-hmm. So there was no, even though you might think, and there had to be in many places some bias, there was not. We were looking for just the best people we could get.
Right.
And so later on, I had an opportunity. I was a representative for the company to provide money to try to get minorities and others into engineering and what have you to encourage. But once the women wanted to be in those kinds of fields in their heart, they were very, very effective. They were very good. But what we had to do in those days for the Atomic Energy Commission is take our secretaries, force them into marketing positions so we'd have the numbers, because the government had to have the numbers of women in these professional positions.
Yeah.
And so they were excellent secretaries, terrible marketers. They weren't going anywhere. And so it was bad for both people involved. So liberty was lost for both.
Again, loss of freedom, loss of liberty. Great example. Okay. Well, let me see now. I've got 10 minutes left here. Oh, another one back here. Okay, go ahead. Name again.
Jonathan.
Jonathan, yeah.
I realize I'm kind of taking an opposing side to this, but so I'll try and put it as delicately and wisely as I can. But there does seem to be some cases where regulation is quite a good thing. I mean, I've researched stuff like nanotechnology where you can't even see it, so normal common sense doesn't necessarily apply because of the different properties it has. So the effects of it might not even be apparent. And with stuff like Three Mile Island and the BP oil spill, sometimes regulations can help. I mean, definitely with Three Mile Island, it could have been a lot, lot worse. So, I'm just saying...
Yep.
If the government is for our good,
yep,
the laws and regulations are there for our good as well.
Yep.
And
I believe that.
Some crazy regulations doesn't necessarily mean we should.
No. Yeah, that's helpful, Jonathan. Thank you. I do not want to be understood to say I'm opposed to all government regulations. I'm not a libertarian in that sense. I'm just thinking we shouldn't have any rules and protections and things like that. So, but I'm just saying what's happened is we've lost sight of common sense. And the government regulators have gone way overboard and gotten way too much control of our lives. And I had these little charts up here before of the essence of liberalism in economics or national defense area. The essence of liberalism in this area is controlling other people's lives. It's seeking to tell us how to live. And that's where I think many times it's gone too far. Bob?
Yeah, Wayne, for a long time I've thought the way to mitigate some of these unreasonable rules and regulations that are promulgated by the government is to have the highest-ranking bureaucrat put his name after every regulation that's passed.
Bob, they're appointed. They're not elected.
Yeah, but I believe somebody who authors some inane regulation would be very reluctant to put his name on it if he knew it was going to be published.
Yeah.
And then he would be subject maybe to the scrutiny.
Yeah, maybe so. Okay. Look, I'm just now... I think everybody likes to talk about this topic. Well, let me just think here. We've got 7 minutes left. I guess we're just going to talk about this the rest of the time, and I get earmarks and mileage standards next time. So I've got back here. Tell me your name again. Dave?
Just to touch base on the automobile, since you thought about getting to it. But, I mean, look at the cars we drive. I think everybody here likes them and enjoys them. It's through some regulation that they became so safe. Being an automotive enthusiast, we have to recognize some things were started for our own good, and then they progressed beyond everybody's control.
Absolutely.
And then we have the contradictions and the problems. But cars, if you think back, everybody here remembers the 60s when there were no seatbelts and remembers, airbags saved lives. A lot of things that...
Right, and I remember
and
when they...
We just have to keep it all in balance, because I think we want what we've got, but a lot of times a lot of people don't want the consequences of their decisions or the accountability that comes with living a free life, and that's what leads to the government kind of taking over as much as they have.
So let me say, I'm glad for pollution controls on cars. I remember as a kid trying to walk down a city street and you couldn't breathe because there's so much smog, just in even small-town USA. So, some of it's good, but it's become far in excess of what is good. Okay, I saw John up here too, so we'll go ahead and then...
So far we've just talked about lack of common sense being a reason for the explosion of regulations. But I would posit that more regulations mean more regulators. More regulators mean more public union employees. More public union employees means more public union employee dues.
Yep.
And those dues are funneled to one particular political party.
But the pendulum is swinging back. So, John?
You started this talking about for the good of the country.
Yes.
And you're talking about the regulator. Take your spiral light bulbs, which are also a fire hazard.
Yep.
How many American jobs went to China because we couldn't put those light, make those light bulbs
there?
How many people were put out of work at General Motors?
Yeah.
How about energy? How many jobs are right now because of the so-called environment? In the Gulf of Mexico, how many Americans are out of work?
Yep.
Because there's so
harmful
what
to
I'm,
the nation.
All I'm simply saying is there's also economic consequences that are pretty drastic.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because there's an economic harm. All these things cost money. Okay, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to just spend about a minute on earmarks. This is outline point C. Earmarks are spending directives inserted by members of Congress into laws and congressional committee reports. A law is passed. It appropriates $10 billion for something, and then in a secret committee, a congressman or a senator can come along and say, oh, $10 billion for this project? Well, I'm going to get $100 million for doing a bike path in my local city, and my citizens are going to like it. And then another, well, we'll do this to study, fish, yeah. I mean, just all these pet projects and thousands of them, and nobody votes on that. Nobody knows what's happening. It's just all congressmen inserting these little extra notes into bills and so saying we're earmarked this amount for this much and this amount for this project, and it tends to be political payback a lot of times for support for something or other. So transparency in that process would help, but my recommendation is rather Congress should appropriate the money. And then it's the executive branch, the president, and the people who are appointed by the president who should say how it's spent. That's their job. Congress is not supposed to micromanage all of that stuff. So that's earmarks in a minute. Now, I'm going to try to get rid of this. I know we're supposed to sing, but here. Okay. So CAFE standards for automobile mileage and cap and trade. I think I'll heed Jack's warning and say, could you bring this back next week? And I'll talk about automobile mileage standards and how it's led everybody to driving smaller and less safe vehicles in the interest of saving the planet from global warming. But I'll talk about mileage standards for automobiles next week. Do we have one? Does somebody want to make one? I've got 1 minute left, and I saw a hand back here. Was somebody I was going to call on? One final comment. Who didn't get to say something? Oh, no, it's Larry and Janice. Okay, go ahead. Oh, wait a second. We've got to give you a working microphone.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to the gentleman over here who made the comment about what do you do about this? Just expand on that for a moment. It seems to me apathy is one of our worst enemies. Mm. There's a lot of talent in this room, a lot of people who have been very successful in their business and professional careers. We just need to get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make a difference. Mm. It may be at a local level somewhere, but we spent 5 years fighting an impossible, irresponsible surcharge by Arizona American Water in Paradise Valley. We got it reversed. Hmm. No one thought we could get it done. Hmm. But if everyone took one cause mm-hmm. and drilled down on that, got involved, you can make a difference, whether it's supporting a candidate, whether it's working for a cause, whether it's lobbying in front of the city council. It just takes people being energized and involved. And I think we can't sit back and say, everything will work out.
Good.
You know? Otherwise, we just sit around and admire the problem.
Is it Janet or Janice?
Janice.
Janice. Thank you. Janice, thank you. That's a great comment to close on. Actually, contacting your congressman about some of these things is also another way to have hopefully some influence. So, good. Thank you. That's good. And that's what this class is about, seeking to have Christian influence on government, not just sit and worry about everything's getting worse, but seeking to pray and see if there are ways that God is calling us to act. So, great note to end on. Lord, we thank you. We thank you, Lord Jesus, that you are one day coming back to reign over the nations of the earth, that you will reign in perfect justice, but you will also, we believe, Lord, restore large measures of freedom, liberty to people in nations of the world. And we ask, Lord, as different people have said in the class here, we ask that you would guide us in helping us know how best we can resist the wrongful incursions of government into areas where our liberty, our freedom, even to serve you and obey you as we see best, has been limited and restricted, and that you would stop the growth of government to intrude in our lives more and more and more. Lord, we cannot do any of that without you and without your help. So we put it in your hands and ask for your guidance. In Jesus' name, amen. See you next week.